the government coming? We need gasoline. With gasoline, you're going to bring food and gasoline and clothes? And gasoline to run generators. Bring us generators. Bring us something to get heat. We're going to die if we get killed with the weather. We're going to die. We're going to freeze. We have no cars. President Obama, please listen to us down here. We are going to die. You don't understand. You've got to get your trucks here on this corner.
Buckle your seatbelt. It's time for another episode of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Today's guest is Starry Hilder. Starry documents her common sense approach to living off the grid on her YouTube channel. People really appreciate the information delivered in a no-nonsense fashion, and that's evidenced by the channel's exploding popularity. Starry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm very happy to be here today.
Oh, absolutely.
From the mountains of Idaho.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. And now, when did you and your husband wake up to the need to be prepared?
Well, you know, that is kind of a loaded question. I will give you the condensed version, because my husband and I, many, many moons ago back in Wisconsin, had lived a very unconventional life, and criticized by our family and friends for our lifestyle. We had always done things differently. When we ran out of water, like our well dried up, we decided that we were going to haul water from the wayside. When our septic failed, we decided we were going to dig our own drain field. We had a barrel stove inside our shop, which heated our building, you know, and people said, you can't do that. You know, if it burns down, the insurance is going to cover the house. And we didn't even have insurance. That was, you know, some of the things that we did unconventionally that society tells you shouldn't do. So probably 20, 25 years ago, we had already been thinking outside the box. But like many Americans, we were still green to many things. Like I didn't pay attention to the politics, but we really believed that, you know, the Democrats and Republicans, you had that duty to go vote. And it was important as American to do that. We believed in investing your money, just like we're taught. You know, get a financial advisor, get an IRA, 401k, put your money in the stock market. So we fell into that trap, as many Americans do, following the sheep, following the herd. But our daily life was really unconventional. But I think when things really started changing for us, when you talk about waking up, I would say it was probably during the Bush administration, when we had all that 9/11 stuff going on, and then the Patriot Act, and then we actually got a computer, which gave us access to research, and we started reading. And boy, I tell you, the internet is just a great source, because it really opens up the rabbit holes, and you can dig really, really deep. And the stuff that we were reading, it really was empowering and waking us up. And I mean, we would sit on the internet till the wee hours and read stuff about the Agenda 21 and the Bohemian Grove. And I mean, we really, really went down the rabbit hole. And we looked at each other and said, you know what? Number one, we're in the wrong region of the United States. What, you know, here we're trying to live the self-sustaining lifestyle totally outside of the box, and we're being hindered by where we live. So that was kind of like the eye-opening event that told us, I think it's time that we need to start looking someplace else and really breaking free from what is enslaving us. And that was, you know, like I said, around 9/11 Bush, and then we went on our quest and did a lot of research into looking for land and where to live and self-sustainable land and really looking at going off the grid. And thus we came full circle, and with the help of God, I tell you, the Holy Spirit led us to where we're at now, and that's the Panhandle of Idaho.
And it had to be the Spirit, because there's this entire movement of people that are moving to the Panhandle of Idaho. A good friend of the show, John Jacob Schmidt, does a radio show called Radio Free Readout up there. And of course, you know, that's where James Wesley Ross, he's been on our show several times, and he recommends moving there. And it's just a whole lot of folks that think and live exactly the way you do, that were already there, and you really didn't even know anything about that community. And so, you know, that had to be the Spirit leading you to live around like-minded people, I would say.
Oh, indeed it was. It was 100% the Holy Spirit, because just before we went on air here, I was talking about how I didn't know who this Wesley Rawls guy is. I don't know who any of these people are. We didn't read a book. We certainly, even when we went on the internet, we didn't even know what readout meant. And in fact, just a couple of months ago, I found out what readout states were, and we were living in one. So truly, the Holy Spirit led us, and I could tell you my whole testimony, how we got out here. It is truly unbelievable. But God led us here, brought us here, and I tell you, the community that we're in, it is almost spooky, because I meet people, I tell you, almost every week that have been led here by God. And they tell me, I will ask them, I will say, you know, what brought you out to our community? And 99% of them have said the Holy Spirit, that the Lord has brought them out here. And these people truly are like-minded. They're here for a purpose, and that purpose really is to be more self-sustainable, to break free from the enslavement. And I really do call it enslavement, because I think so many Americans are really enslaved and indoctrinated with this way of thinking. And coming out here has really freed us. It's freed us spiritually and emotionally and physically. And truly, like I said, this was a Holy Spirit thing. So.
And government, education, banking, food production, these are all basically failed establishments as far as being part of our society. And you just spoke to us a little bit about, you know, you bought into the paradigm, you know, get a financial advisor, get your 401k. Tell us how that worked out for you. Tell us what your philosophy is now, and talk to us a little bit more about that, unplugging from this failing system.
Yeah, and that was actually a real process, because when we first got married, the first thing I noticed was my husband had a life insurance policy. Here he is, 32 years old, with a life insurance policy, and even I thought that was kind of odd. And so I started looking into his finances, because he had a taxidermy business, and I thought, you know, we're married now, and let's get the show on the road and figure out what we're going to do for our future. And when I started doing some research, I'm like, okay, the financial advice from this guy just doesn't make any sense. So again, you know, thinking outside the box, I empowered myself and learned everything that I could about stocks and mutual funds. And it got to the point where I was so well-versed that I would go into these financial institutions and they'd want to hire me as a financial advisor. Wasn't interested in that, but I knew my stuff. So I took the bull by the horns, and still believing in the stock market and mutual funds and all that, I still bought into it, started investing our own money, and I actually did some day trading. And then went and had the 401k and did all the financial vehicles that are available to people. But then the wake-up call came, and I believe it was the crash of the 90s when the dot-coms were being heavily traded, and waking up one morning and seeing the crash of those stocks. And I mean, it was, you look on the computer and you think that money is real. and seeing those numbers disappear so fast, and all the hard work and the money that we had put into the market was gone in basically a week's time. It was like poof. So we were sitting there at the age of 30 with no more money. All we had was a very small 401k and an IRA worth less than, I'd say, $6,000. And we couldn't pull it out at that time just simply because the market had crashed. So that was a real wake-up call, seeing the stock market turn on a dime just because of sentiment. And then what ended up happening after that was the other wake-up call is, and I still wasn't waking up 100%. I thought, okay, this is horrible. We're going to have to revamp. We're going to rebuild, and that's what we did. We started working harder and earned a little bit of extra money, and I thought I'd get it back in the stock market, put it back in, and then the whole rabbit hole thing, the getting on the internet, doing the research, and one day we just decided, you know what, this stuff that's on the computer, these financial statements that we get, that's really not even real. So we called up, you know, Fidelity Investments and some of our other places that we had money and asked for our money. I started, you know, selling things off. And the first thing they did when I started selling things off was they put a hold on my account. And I remember that day. It was horrible because I called them and I said, why can't I sell my mutual funds and my stocks? Well, you know, this is suspicious activity. This is suspicious. And we just want to make sure that, you know what you're doing. To make a long story short, it took probably about 2 to 3 weeks to get my money out of those financial institutions. And when I got my money out of the financial institution, so this is really awesome, they send me a check. Oh, okay, so that's great. I've got it on paper, still not in my hand, still not real. So I took the check and you go to the bank, right? You go to the bank and you're going to cash that check and you're going to get cash. Oh, no. They don't have cash in the bank. So here I am at the bank, and they're trying to scare me and tell me, oh, you know, this is a big check, and are you sure you want cash? And if you cash it in and you take the cash, you know, the government is going to audit you. And you're sitting there thinking, is this really happening? You know, people, I think, really think that financial statement or whatever is on the computer, they have that. They own that. That's real. People, it's not real. It is not real until you get this cash in your hands. And as I'm standing in the bank and the teller is telling me that these are my options, I can give you a cashier's check for the cash that for the check you're trying to cash, or we can put it in a money market, but I can't give you cash, at least not today, without ordering it. And so here we go. And what ended up happening is we ordered the money. It wasn't even a big amount. You know, think about anything over $10,000. You're not going to get it in cash that day because they're going to have to order that money. And then when they order it, it's a big ordeal about, oh, you know, you got to sign for it and they got to count it. And, oh, I mean, it's unreal. So when all of that happened, we finally did get some cash in our hands. We realized the gig is up. This is a game. It's a fairy tale. And you don't own it until it's in your hand. And then our whole philosophy changed. And that's when we decided the best investment, people wake up, the best investment is yourselves. 401ks, IRAs, we cashed that in. We didn't have very much in there. But take the penalty. We took the small little penalty to get our own money back. Isn't that funny? They penalize you to ask for your money back. And we did get our money back. And everything that we got in cash then went into our self-sustainability, buying items to empower us, buying items to free us, to produce, to create. So that was the beginning of the end, but the beginning of everything.
And your solar panels that are on your house, your pantry, which is very well stocked, your beautiful home up on the mountain, none of that fluctuates with the market. It's down again today, another 500 points as we're recording this. Of course, it probably won't air for another week. So, I mean, who knows how much volatility could happen between now and the time this actually goes on. But that doesn't fluctuate. And I'm always telling people to incrementally take out, you know, $500, $1,000 and put that in a safe place, because if this all blows up, we're going to see the same things that the folks over in Greece saw, where they're standing in lines to get to an ATM that has nothing in it, and the banks are closed, and the money's just not there. And I think that people don't realize this. They think that they could go and well, I've got $30,000 in the bank, and I could go take it out tomorrow if I wanted to, and I can sell off my portfolio, my $150,000 portfolio, and have that cash in my hand within 2 or 3 days. And that is absolutely not reality at all. And I'm so glad that you shared that experience with us. And I hope some folks will learn from that, and they'll really seek shelter from what it looks like is could be coming upon this nation. And now, after spending a few years of investing in yourself and into your own sustainability, how are the returns?
The returns are phenomenal. I mean, if you've seen the YouTube channel, we are 100% self-sustainable here in our off-grid setup. We have such peace. You know, this is the great thing. Our life, we get up, we have no alarm clocks. We get up whenever we want, do whatever we want. It is just, that in itself is worth more than money in the bank, and that return, you know, our health is, you know, we're healthy. Our lifestyle is healthy. We're very physically fit. We're very active. I tell you, we sleep really well at night, and we are 100% debt free. And that itself is so freeing. And everything, that we have on our homestead provides for us. And then if we do get a little extra cash, what do? We reinvest it in ourselves. So, and that really is the key, because like you said, people, man, you got to wake up. Because one day, you know, just like you said with Greece, you think you can go to the bank and get that money out today. You think that little plastic debit card is going to always work. It's not. And I always advocate for people, especially when they come to my channel. If you can't do it now, today, you do it in small baby steps. But you got to start somewhere. Invest in yourself.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold.
And I love what you said, a great dividend that having peace of mind is, because there's people that are going to have trouble sleeping tonight because of this 500-point market drop. You know, they're kicking themselves. Oh, I should have took it out last week and it went down 1,000 points, but then it went back up 600 points, and I thought it was going to recover, and I don't know what to do. And they're just hyperventilating. They're freaking out, and they're not going to sleep tonight. They probably haven't slept good in 2 or 3 weeks, and this is just it's just driving them insane. And you're not in the market. It doesn't bother you at all. You know, but I'm sure you can probably remember what that was like back when you were in it.
Oh, yeah, especially when I was day trading. I mean, I was making money. And that's the addiction. Because don't get me wrong, you can make money. There's no doubt that you can make money. But it goes back to, is that money even real? And you could lose that money in a blink of the eye. And the risk is so phenomenal. And you know, like you said, the stress that is involved. Yeah, I remember the highs and the lows and sitting at that computer, pushing those buttons and waiting to see what the market was going to do tomorrow and not knowing and relying on people's sentiment, you know. And then now we have to worry about the manipulation. You know, even looking at buying gold and silver, which is a great refuge, but it is so heavily manipulated now. It's just ruining things. So, you know, the only thing I have to worry about now is going out to my garden, figuring out what tomatoes and peppers I have to pick. You know, that is a great, great feeling.
And talk to us about the gardening method that you use.
Oh, well, this gardening method saved us, because we came up here to our homestead. The unfortunate thing is you can have many, many things on your little list of what you need for a homestead, you know, water and you know, renewable resources and good soil. Well, the one thing that we didn't have, unfortunately, on this homestead was good soil. And we were left kind of, you know, standing there with all this clay and this rock thinking, how are we going to create a vibrant, abundant productive garden. And we actually went on YouTube. You know, we love YouTube, and we found the Back to Eden Garden Method, which is, I believe, it's Paul Goshi, I think his last name is, but he is actually one of our neighbors in Washington. And I love this guy because he is a follower of Christ, and he just, you know, if you look in nature, God created, whatever God created is perfect. It's perfect. And man messes it up. And we mess up gardening. You know, we till and we add fertilizers and we retill, and we just mess it up with all the chemicals and the crap that we put into the soil. The great thing about the Back to Eden method, and it's all about wood chips in nature, is that if you let nature do what it is supposed to do, you're going to have abundance. So for us, it really was a lifesaver, because what ended up happening is it has to do with wood chips and layering and not tilling and just leaving things set. So our Back to Eden method, we went out and went on a scout-a-thon for wood chips. We were blessed because the first year we actually found some aged wood chips. We had to buy a little bit of a topsoil because we really did start with nothing. But I always say, spend some money where that life insurance policy is going to pay you back. So if you got to buy some topsoil, buy some topsoil. And then we went on a hunt for manure. And then we started our own composting, and then we started with the raised beds using this wood chip method. And I tell you, the first year, we had great abundance. Now, this is going into our third, fourth year, and the produce, I can't keep up with it. The garden is a jungle. We don't have to weed it, and we are in drought conditions right now. People's gardens in the panhandle all over are dying because there's no water. Things are drying up. The great thing about this method, because of the wood chips, is it inhibits water evaporation. You dig down into my soil, and it's moist. We were just not really bragging, but we were so happy because within the last 3 months, my husband watered the garden once each month. Now, a little bit more because of the extreme conditions, but if we didn't have this Back to Eden method, our garden too would be dead just like everybody else's, and we'd be sucking our water dry, which we can't afford right now.
And you're using concrete blocks for your raised beds now, I saw, and that's what I'm doing. We just relocated from southern Florida, and you're preaching to the choir talking about poor soil, because Florida's essentially an 800-mile-long sandbar. So, you know, there's no nutrients in the soil at all. So we were in Fort Lauderdale, we did a raised bed garden, and we used wood planks, which, you know, the whole part of the process of composting your stuff is that, you know, you've got all the little bugs and the little critters, and they're breaking the organic material down and making soil for you. And, of course, if you're using wood, that rots out pretty quick. And so we're doing what you're doing, and we're using the concrete blocks this time because I had to change that wood out a couple of times. I know some people will use railroad ties, but then they've got arsenic in them. And, and then I hear different schools of thought about leaching, but concrete blocks, you don't have to worry about that. So that's what we're doing as well. Talk to us about the layering. Now, once you get the raised bed built with the concrete blocks, what do you layer in there, and what are the individual layers?
Well, it's really simple. And I'll just add, too, that we actually got rid of our concrete blocks because once you start using this method and you start adding, like, the layers and adding, you will find that soil just builds up and builds up and builds up. And pretty soon, we just got rid of all the concrete blocks. And we have beautiful raised beds that we don't need any containment anymore.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
You'll probably find that yourself. Yeah, you'll find that yourself as years go by and you start doing the composting and adding that you won't even use those concrete blocks. But the layering is real simple. What you do is you start with cardboard or newspaper, and that's what you put down on the ground. Now, if you're starting from really poor soil like we did, like sand, and it also is to get rid of the weeds, you know, so you're going to lay that down. Now, sometimes you can forego the cardboard or the newspaper if you're starting with some pretty good soil underneath. The next thing is you want to add a layer of compost on top of that cardboard and that newspaper, a couple inches. And then after you do the compost, mix a little bit of manure in there, and then you add your wood chips. And then you let it sit. And I know Paul advocates for doing it hopefully if you can, in the fall, because if you think about in nature, the fall is when things fall to the ground, and then it kind of sits there over a winter. You've got the water working on it, and water kind of accelerates the process of decomposition. So if you can start your Back to Eden garden with the wood chips and this layering method, by the time spring comes, you'll be ready to plant.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's probably even better if you live somewhere that has fall, because here we just have almost summer, still summer, and then our fourth season is called tourist season. So
I like that.
But that makes sense to do everything in the natural cycle that, like you said, God's got this perfect design, and if we just don't mess with it and just do it His way, everything would work out so much better. Now, tell us about what you're able to grow.
Oh, I can grow just about anything, but I will. This is when we set up the garden, and this is the best advice I could give to people. It's always exciting to have a garden, and sometimes you can go overboard with, grow what you eat. Now, I remember when I first started gardening many, many years ago, I bought all these different seeds. I bought eggplant seeds. I don't even eat eggplant, but I'm going to grow eggplant. And I did grow eggplant. And be smart about your garden. Now, we grow an abundance of different types of peppers, you name it, so many varieties, different varieties of tomatoes. I've got cabbage. I've got celery. I've got all my leafy greens. I've got carrots, pumpkins, and just different squashes and zucchinis. This is all stuff that we eat. So don't go overboard with a garden just because you can grow it doesn't necessarily, but you can grow it, but if you don't eat it, it really is just a waste. So everything that I grow, and then I do a lot of a permaculture too, because if you've seen my videos, we are very limited for space on, even though we have 13 acres, it's a benched piece of property. And my philosophy when we came out here to, we had a lot of erosion problems. We've got the rock, we've got the clay, and I really wanted to create not just a beautiful garden, but a landscape that would be sustainable, that would draw in bees and butterflies and help with the erosion and add shade. And that really is kind of the permaculture philosophy. So if you look throughout my property, every single corner that I could get something growing, I did. So there was a method to my madness. So I've got different herbs throughout my property. I've got different medicinal plants that are growing. I've got different grasses, different flowers. We've got berries. We have different fruit trees. So that really is important too. I think people think that you just need that big garden, but if you can create a permaculture environment around your off-grid or homestead, property, that will pay you back in returns 100-fold.
And for folks that have been on your YouTube channel, and for folks that haven't yet, I definitely encourage you to go check that out, because it's just a lot of great stuff, and it's just a beautiful channel. You've got a great pantry. Was allocating that much space to food storage, was that part of the initial plan?
It was. And my husband actually was the designer of our house. And we knew right away that one of the most important things on a self-sustainable homestead was going to be having a pantry and food storage. So we did incorporate that into the design of the house. Now, our house is pretty small because it's just me and my husband. But the bigger room definitely goes to the pantry. And our design also really incorporated a self-sustainable idea, because being off the grid, being reliant on the solar and our batteries, we designed it so that not only we have a beautiful view, but the windows are placed so that we have light. Our lights. We use solar. Those windows, solar boxes that, my husband knows what they are. They go in the roof and they bring light in. So we incorporated that so that our rooms in the back had light, and we wouldn't be turning on the light on and off. And even the design of how we built the house, the back wall is actually built into the dirt. So where that pantry sits, it's all cement. and we were built on a slab also. So it's cool in the summertime. When it was 100 degrees out here, we would come inside our house, and as long as we kept the doors closed, we had a regular temperature of between, I think, 68 and 69 because of the design. And then the other part of the design is in the wintertime, being able to heat the house. So it was really important, not just the pantry and storing our food, but the design of that house. It could sustain us through the winter, in the summer, and it would take all those things in consideration, you know, the heating, the lighting, the cooling. So very, and I think it's overlooked when people go off grid and they want to be sustainable, the design of the house. And there's cool designs out there. We've seen hay bale houses and the tire houses and earthship houses. So many cool things out there. But for us, this really worked well, especially being in the mountains.
And for folks that are just starting out with food storage, what do you think you might have done different if you would have known then what you know now when you started out with your storage plan?
Yeah, my food storage plan. I'm smarter than I look because I don't know how to explain it, but didn't read any books about food storage, didn't watch any YouTube videos. I just kind of always knew. And my mother and my grandmother always canned. They always stored food. We always had a full pantry. I would say, you know, most of my information just came from being passed down and common sense, really, and just how we used to live back in Wisconsin. So, but there's nothing that I would change and nothing that I would do differently. But for those starting a pantry, what I would say and what I always advocate is when you're buying things, buy things that you eat. Don't start buying things just because they're on sale and storing those items. Like if you don't eat macaroni and cheese, don't buy the macaroni and cheese just because it's a dollar. Because food storage really is about having a pantry that is functional, that you can store food that you're going to eat long term. And we are real big advocates of rice and beans. That's what we eat. We love rice and we love beans. I've got red rice. I've got the black rice. I've got brown rice. But I eat it. And the same thing with my beans. We buy black beans, turtle beans, navy beans, pinto beans. And I can all my beans too. And the reason why I can a lot of my beans, not just keeping them in dry storage, but we eat them all the time. So I don't want to be firing up the whatever, however people cook their beans, crock pots or pressure canners. I do all my canning ahead of time. So I got a full pantry of stocked canned goods that I canned myself and go to the garden. I get all my fresh vegetables out for the day, and I go to my my kitchen, and I throw a tortilla on my cast iron pan, and I go to the pantry, and I get my black beans and my pinto beans and my salsa and a little bit of cheese, and there you go. You got a meal. So,
and do you guys can the game that you kill?
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons why we moved out here was my husband's a big game hunter, and I hunt too, so we both bow hunt and gun hunt. And he's a taxidermist. But one of the things that we looked at in an area to move was game. The abundance of game, the possibility to sustain on the game. So, you know, we bought meat chickens this year, which is great, and a lot of people do have farm animals. But if you think about farm animals, one day you might not be able to get the chickens at the co-op. They might not be able to UPS them, because if the stuff hits the fan, that might not be available. So we look at big game as a renewable resource. We're in a great area in the panhandle here. There's big game all over the place, be it you know, whitetail and elk and bear. There are mountain lions. There's fishing. There's birds. So a lot of renewable resources. And part of a sustainable homestead really is, this is what we think, is being able to have a renewable resource with the food that you put on your table. You know, ordering chickens is not a renewable resource. Having the pigs is not a renewable resource. So big game hunting is really important to fill our pantry. And I can 99% of that meat, and the other 1% goes into the griddle basically right away.
And you got a nice solar setup as well. What what appliances can you operate on that? And what was your initial setup cost for your solar?
We have a 2-kilowatt array with 16 6-volt batteries, and we've got the conventional. We have a Midnight Solar charge controller. We've got the Magnum inverter. And we, you know, this is the thing with solar. You can have a huge array. You can have a small array. You can run a lot of appliances. But the bottom line is when you go off grid, you're looking at a more self-sustainable lifestyle, which means you're not going to have, you know, the microwave. It just shouldn't be part of an off-grid setup. I mean, you're looking at living healthier. It just doesn't fit into that philosophy and that way of living. So we could have a microwave if we wanted, but we don't. We don't have an electric coffee pot. But the things that we do have are basically what most households have. We run a refrigerator. We've got a very small freezer. We have I've got my household appliances that I use for cooking. And we've got the computer, no television, got rid of that years and years ago, and our lights. And, boy, I'm looking around the house here, and pretty simple setup. My husband's got all his power tools. But it really is about being smart with your electrical use. I think even nowadays, people, even when they're on the grid, they're like electricity hoarders. They just really think that when you flip that switch, that electricity is always going to be there. And I think we really get too dependent on it, and we overuse. So I really just advocate rethinking, being more smart with your electrical use. And the other thing about our setup, even though we've got a beautiful 2-kilowatt array and we've got really for us plenty of electricity to run our whole homestead, we can run the homestead without the solar array. And that's really important too, because once again, if you are really talking about being self-sustainable, let's just say something happens to your solar panels. I don't know. Maybe there's an earthquake. I don't know. Maybe your battery bank blows up. I don't know. But just think about that. So on my homestead, I've got alternative ways of cooking. Like in the summer here, I'm always using my Dutch oven. I've got an all-season solar oven that I use. We've got our wood stove. So in the wintertime, I'm cooking off the wood stove. So always using those alternative ways to cook. My washing machine died a couple months ago. Did I go get a repairman? No. I just simply got a tub that my husband picked up from the recycling center. I'm doing my laundry by hand. You have to be able to think outside the box when you're living this type of lifestyle. Being flexible is going to be imperative to the success of your homestead.
Fantastic advice. Now, besides your YouTube channel, you also have a blog, is that right?
Yeah, I decided to do a blog because so many people have been coming to my channel, and I spend, and I love people. I mean, their comments are just so inspiring, and God is like bringing people. I mean, it's on fire, and people are getting revived, and the Holy Spirit is moving them. And so I spend a lot of time commenting. And a lot of people said, you know what? We love your channel. You should write a book. Why don't you write a book? Why don't you get a website started? Maybe you should go on Facebook. So I really listened to my viewers' feedback. And so now I have a Facebook thing. And then I also have the website with my blog. And the great thing about my blog and my website is I'm able to write articles and then give back more to people, because my videos do a good job at explaining stuff, but it's more of an elaboration and more in depth some of the articles that I write, because people really are waking up to this type of lifestyle and they are thirsty, really thirsty for information.
And tell us the name of the blog, and then for folks that still don't know yet, tell us where your YouTube channel is, and then also how to connect with you on Facebook.
Sure. My website blog is at www.offgridevolution.com. So just type that in. They can find my blog, and I've got lots of cool stuff on there. My YouTube channel is Starry Hilder. So just type that on in. And my Facebook is also right under Starry Hilder.
Sorry, thank you so much for taking time out of your, I'm sure, busy day, keeping all that stuff going, to come and talk to us today. And thanks for being a great example in showing people a better way to unplug from a failing system and to live a better life.
Yeah, well, God bless all you people out there. And thank you, Mark, for having me on.
In the Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition. A global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness, which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.